Dr. William Luther Pierce, the year 2000. Biopolitics.
Hello. As I prepare my remarks for today's broadcast, last month's presidential election is still just a bit up in the air with the lawyers for both sides preparing for further court challenges, so it is remotely possible that the Democrats could take the White House away from the Republicans, although that doesn't seem likely. What is certain is that this recent electoral circus has been acutely embarrassing to everyone who is stupid enough or naive enough still to believe, at this late date in the self-destruction of Western civilization, that democracy is a reasonable way for our people to govern themselves. The Republicans may have taken the prize in this lamentable and undignified contest, but they have very little for which to congratulate themselves, because it is quite clear that they can never again win as Republicans, that is, as upholders of the American tradition of independence and self-discipline, which Republicans in the past claimed to champion. The only way they can win the next election 4 years from now is to continue trying to make themselves indistinguishable from the Democrats, to keep moving to the left, to keep trying to out-Democrat the Democrats. The old theory was that the country would swing like a pendulum from a Republican ascendancy to a Democratic ascendancy, and then back again, as the mood of the people changed, as economic conditions and the unemployment rate fluctuated. Sometimes the voters would be in a conservative mood, and sometimes they would be in favor of change. Sometimes they would be pleased with the way the government was running the country, and at other times they would blame the government for doing everything wrong and bringing misfortune to the country. This theory postulated a fixed electorate and changing conditions, which caused the prevailing mood of the electorate to change. What we have now, of course, is a rapidly changing electorate, and that is more important than fluctuating conditions. Until 80 years ago, we had a white male electorate. For another 30 or 40 years, roughly, even though women were voting from 1920 and were shifting the process to the left, the electorate was still almost completely white. The Second World War, fought in the name of equality and democracy, set the stage for changing all of that. The country was 90% white as late as 1950. And most blacks still didn't vote. But the process of change had begun. A massive campaign was underway to move the country further and further to the left, to make it more and more democratic. Part of this campaign involved elevating the status of the descendants of our former black slaves to that of the whites and registering them to vote. Part of it involved changing our immigration laws to cut off the flow of immigrants from Europe, except Jews, of course, and to bring in millions of non-white immigrants from the Third World. Part of it involved organizing and encouraging the growth of various alienated and aggrieved segments of the white population, homosexuals and feminists, for example. And part of it involved enlarging the portion of the electorate dependent on the government for handouts of one sort or another by greatly increasing the number of government welfare programs, food stamps, rent subsidies, medical assistance, and 100 others. So now we have a country which is 30% non-white, and that 30% is part of a democratic coalition, which also includes the Jews, the homosexuals, and the feminists, not to mention a substantial minority of whites who, for one reason or another, also have joined the coalition. In some cases, the reason is simply a Bolshevik resentment of people who are more successful. In some cases, it is a fashionable sort of liberalism, which is propagated vigorously by the schools, by the Christian churches, and especially by the mass media. And in many cases, especially among the growing segment of the population, which is elderly, it is simply a matter of voting for whoever promises them the biggest government handout, something at which the Democrats traditionally have been better. And this Democratic coalition can only grow, not because of changes in economic conditions or in the mood of the electorate, but because of the changing biology of the electorate. In particular, the country is becoming more non-white with each passing year. The Democrats have been gloating during the past decade that before the end of the first 50 years of this century, the United States will have a non-white majority, and that then there will be no way the white race can ever regain control of its own destiny and put a stop to the growth of multiculturalism. Bill Clinton, in particular, has been boasting of this to college audiences around the country, generally to enthusiastic applause from the Bolshevik and liberal elements, which have become so prominent on our campuses since the Second World War. Of course, this process can be stopped, but not by voting, not through the democratic process. Unfortunately, most white American males, feminized wimps that they have become, are afraid even to contemplate the necessary means for reversing the biological degeneration of their country. And as for the Republicans, they refused even to use the electoral process while that was still a feasible means for reversing the slide toward racial oblivion. People could see what was coming a long time ago. What has happened to America may be a surprise to the lemmings, to the people who know nothing except what they see on TV. But it certainly is no surprise to the leading Republican politicians, to the party bosses, or to the principal financial supporters of the Republican Party. They could see the consequences of our government's policies as well as the Democrats could, who were formulating and promoting those policies. So, why didn't the Republicans do anything? Well, I believe you already know the answer, but I'll state it anyway. The Republican Party long ago succumbed to the inevitably lethal disease of party politics, wherein the electoral campaigns in which they engaged ceased being campaigns to support certain principles of government which they believed would be a benefit to the country or to our people, and became instead mere scrambles for patronage, scrambles to get their man at the head of the trough instead of the Democrats' man, so that the Republicans could reward their people with government jobs, pass laws that would benefit their supporters, and so on. For the most part, they ceased caring what happens to the country in the long run and cared only about the immediate material benefits to be gained by winning the next election and getting control of the government, especially of the Treasury. And to the extent that some of them still did care about the country, they were afraid to act. They were afraid that they might lose votes by acting. They were afraid that more people might vote against them for taking a principled stand than would vote for them. Take the current immigration disaster as an example. There are Republican businessmen who actually favor the continuing flood of non-whites into the country because that keeps the cost of labor down. But those Republicans who are opposed to the continued darkening of America won't take a strong stand against non-white immigration because, first, they are afraid that they will alienate more non-white voters who already are in the country than they will gain in white voters who approve of their stand. And second, they are afraid of the powerful forces which would attack them if they took a stand in opposition to non-white immigration, the most powerful of those forces being the controlled mass media. We have, in other words, political candidates, political leaders who are afraid to provide real leadership, and in fact have no interest in providing real leadership. They simply want to be popular. They simply want to win votes. They want to figure out what will get them elected and then build a campaign platform accordingly. And the reason they want to be elected is not so that they can lead the country or lead their people, but rather so that they can have the power and the perks that come with being elected. And there are lots of perks. Once you've been elected president, once you've been elected even to the U.S. Senate for only one term, you're in the lap of luxury for the rest of your life. Corporations will pay you huge sums just to be on their board of directors and do nothing. You can go on the speaking circuit and collect $25,000 a shot to give speeches. This is the inevitable disease of party politics. Getting elected, not policy or principle, becomes the only goal, and there is no leadership. The country drifts in whatever direction the behind-the-scenes manipulators of public opinion want it to go. That's where the real power lies in the television age, in media control. And there is not a politician in America who dares to try to buck that media control, who dares to speak out against it. Now, despite everything I've said, there are people in the Republican Party who really are distressed with the way the country is drifting, who really do want what is best for our people. They regard the Republican Party as the only bulwark against Bolshevism and degeneracy, against the further darkening of America, against the further erosion of all of the values and standards and institutions which are dear to them and which they believe have made America great. It must be very frustrating to them to watch George Bush try to out-Democrat Al Gore in order to win votes. They must know in their hearts that when George Bush gets in the White House, he will not do the hard and bloody things which are necessary to save America. They must know that he will not buck the system which got him elected. He will not arrange for dependable men to be put on the Joint Chiefs of Staff and then to begin cleansing the armed forces and then declare martial law and move on the media. He won't do it. He will go through the motions of leading the country, and he will do it according to the system's rules because the system has been good to him. He will begin by appointing enough blacks and other non-whites to his cabinet and to other high posts in his administration to prove that he is a faithful worshiper at the altar of multiculturalism. He will go to synagogues wearing a yarmulke and will bow his head and look appropriately solemn whenever the memory of the Holocaust, hallowed be its name, is invoked. He will do that sort of thing for 4 years. And if the media bosses are still happy with him, he will shift his platform a little further to the left, appeal more to the non-whites and the welfare dependents, and run again. Patriotic Republicans must know that. And in at least some of them, that must lead to a sense of desperation. But what else is there? Civil war and bloody revolution? Most of them cannot even bear to think about such things. They have become accustomed all their lives to obeying the law and doing things by the rules, to respecting the government and its processes, including the electoral process. So what can they do besides watch their country become darker and more degenerate, more multicultural, more democratic? The one good thing which has come out of this recent presidential election is a weakening of the faith of some white voters in the system. Not most, but some. That's a good thing, because only when a lot more of them have given up on the system and realized finally that they must act against the system, is there any reasonable likelihood that the system can be overcome? Unfortunately, most Republicans who finally understand that their party has become just as corrupt as the Democratic Party and have quit the Republican Party in disgust still won't understand the nature of the problem we are facing. So what they will do is turn to a third party, and that will, of course, be of absolutely no avail, even if by some miracle the leaders of the third party are not only capable politicians, but also patriots. Most of these ex-Republicans still will be thinking in terms of a homogeneous white electorate, an electorate which shares their values, and which, if only it can be made to see that both major parties are corrupt and are leading the country to oblivion, will vote for a new party of decency and patriotism. They won't understand that we no longer have a homogeneous white electorate. They won't grasp the fact that we let that slip away from us. They won't understand that what we have now is not a political problem, but a biological problem. They won't understand that any party which appeals for votes on the basis of their values will not win the votes of the Democratic coalition, which does not share their values, and that third party, therefore, cannot win an election. Suppose the third party is led by genuine patriots who are good politicians and also are willing to use deception just the way the Republicans and the Democrats do. Suppose the third party has a candidate who is much more charismatic than the Republican or Democratic candidate, and that this third party candidate is willing to lie to the voters, is willing to promise everything to everyone in order to get votes. He will promise the blacks more affirmative action. He will promise the homosexuals that he will support the decriminalization of pedophilia. He will promise the feminists that he will make a woman commandant of the Marine Corps. He will promise the welfare class bigger Social Security checks, free prescription drugs, and more food stamps with no restrictions on using the food stamps for liquor and cigarettes. He will promise the Jews to convert the Lincoln Memorial, the Jefferson Memorial, and the Washington Monument to Holocaust memorials, and to support legislation making Holocaust studies a compulsory part of the curriculum in every public school beginning in the first grade. He still won't win if he is a genuine patriot, because he will have to tell his lies to the voters through the mass media. And the Jewish bosses of the mass media won't be fooled by his lies. They are not about to allow a Trojan horse into the government. They check out every candidate for high public office more carefully than the head of the CIA is checked out by the FBI. Unless a man has demonstrated beyond any doubt that he is an unprincipled crook, that he has no loyalty to his country or his race, and that he will follow the lead of the Jews, he won't be permitted to charm the voters through the mass media. And without the mass media, there is no way he can win the votes of the lemmings, Democrat, Republican, or Independent. I'll say it again. Because of the biological nature of the political problem we face, we cannot save ourselves through party politics or the electoral process. So, what can we do? The first thing we must do is fully accept the reality of our situation. Most people have a hard time doing that. They so intensely want there to be an easy solution, a nice solution, a safe solution, that they simply can't accept the fact that we waited too long to vote ourselves out of the mess which is engulfing us. They tell me, "Oh, I'm tired of hearing your negativity. I'm tired of hearing your doomsday predictions. I'm tired of hearing your talk of revolution. I want to hear a positive solution to our problem." Well, to me, any solution which will work is a positive solution. It may not be nice. It may not allow everyone to continue doing what he is doing now in comfort and safety. But if it will save our people from the annihilation which is a certain consequence of the present course, then it is a positive solution. For us, it is a choice between being sheep and allowing ourselves to be led nicely to the slaughter, or becoming wolves instead and slaughtering those who would slaughter us. And it is clear that the latter choice is the positive choice. In fact, it is the only choice free and reasonable men can make. And I say this not because I am hoping for violence and bloodshed for their own sake. I always have been a non-violent person. If anyone can show me a nice solution and convince me that it is workable, I will embrace it in an instant. If anyone can convince me that there is a solution which will permit everyone who is now comfortable to remain comfortable, and which will not cause him to have qualms of conscience because it is unfair to some elements of the Democratic coalition, a solution which is nice and fair and will not hurt anyone's feelings or cause anyone to be kicked out of the country club and is workable, I will go for it. And I will never again say anything which makes people feel uncomfortable. But at this moment, it is my sincere belief that there is no nice solution to our biopolitical problem. I believe in the real world, the unforgiving world of nature, in which we evolved through hard and bloody struggle over millions of years. Perhaps it is not a nice world, but it still can be a beautiful world if one looks at it with the right attitude. And I believe that the reason so many of our people simply will not accept that real world today is that they are too comfortable with the present situation. They are living well. They feel safe. They are perceptive enough to see the destructive trends carrying our race to extinction, but their comfort and safety are more important to them, and so they adjust their perceptions accordingly. The best thing that can happen is for them to lose their comfort and their feeling of safety. When that happens, I believe that most of them can accept reality. And when we have a million or so of the more capable and intelligent members of our race accepting reality and putting the survival of their kind above everything else, there is nothing they cannot do, no enemy they cannot vanquish. They cannot outvote the Democratic coalition, of course, which will continue its malignant growth year by year. They will not outnumber the biological enemy. They will not constitute an electoral majority, but they can embody a majority of will and determination. And properly informed and motivated and organized, they can solve our biopolitical problem. We cannot at this time cause these safe and comfortable people to lose their safety and comfort. Or at least I don't know how to take those things away from them. If I did, I certainly would do it. But what we can do, what I know how to do, is keep informing these people, informing all of them, and motivating and organizing a few of them now. And when circumstances presently beyond our control make more of them uncomfortable, we'll motivate and organize those too. And you can help. Please join me in this effort. And thanks for being with me again today.